This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where I give you access each week to the world's greatest athletes and executives about their personal and professional playbook and what has made them champions on and off the field.
Yankees win!
That contract extension was for $176 million.
Touchdown! And a title for the Patriots!
I can't believe it!
I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing and Entrepreneurs the Playbook. Now we got a special playbook because normally we have Hall of Fame athletes, Paulo Ono, you know, the Marcellus Wileys of the world. This is more my speed because I'm truly an entrepreneur and I like to get into the mind and the playbook of true successful entrepreneurs. And Dave Portnoy is, to me, a mentor. He doesn't know it, but I watched his career because I wanted to understand the new branding of people and content. And Dave, as you know, is the CEO of Barstool Sports, who has just risen in the world of media. And so, Dave, welcome to the Playbook.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're going to go back a little bit because I wanted people to get into your mind of, you know, what your dreams and aspirations were and how you got to the point you are. You grew up in Massachusetts.
Yep.
Huge Patriots fan.
Huge Patriot fan, all Boston sports teams.
Since you were a little kid?
I liked the Vikings when I was age 8, maybe 8 to 12, and then after that I was struggling. I mean, the Patriots are horrible when I grew up. I mean, yeah. horrible, so they're tough to root for. But other than that, yeah, Boston sports teams.
Why'd you like the Vikings?
I actually thought their helmets looked like candy. When I was like a kid, I wanted to eat it, so I just started watching them.
Nice. Yeah. All right, so you're a huge Patriots fan. You end up going to college in Michigan, though.
Right.
Why did you choose Michigan?
So my sister was a senior when I was, a freshman. So I visited her in high school, and any, I think, high school kid who goes to a college is like, oh, my God, this is the best place in the world. So kind of fell in love with it that way.
Like, wanted to be like big sis.
I just wanted to, like, go to a place that seemed like it was a lot of fun. I don't know.
And great school, too, right?
Yeah, real good school.
You know, I have that combination of Ohio State, Michigan. So,
yep.
But, you know, at Lee's, we represented Harbaugh. In fact, I tried to convince him when Jim got into coaching, he coached at USD.
Yep.
And Lee was kind of going through his personal issues. And I tried to convince him, like, hey, Jim wants us to represent him again. And he's like, oh, no. And I'm like, oh, what a mistake, right? I mean, the coaches are the best people to represent because you don't have to babysit them.
Right.
You can make more money. And he ended up with a huge contract, obviously, with the Niners and then with Michigan.
Michigan.
You could have cashed in. Big loss. Anyway, all right, so Michigan, why did you go to Michigan? What did you want to study there?
So I really bounced around. It's funny. I applied to the school and got denied, like to the liberal arts school, but they sent a letter that said, we think you'd be a great nurse. I have no idea why they thought that. I called my sister up and I said, hey, they accepted me to the nursing program. If I go, can I just transfer schools once I get in? She's like, yeah, that's simple. So I showed up as a nurse. I left as an education major because I couldn't pass Spanish and they didn't have a Spanish requirement in the education. So I bounced around. I really didn't know what I wanted to do, to be honest, when I graduated and ended up, once I did, I just took a sales job. The economy was great when I graduated. So I just got into tech sales and it was pretty good. So I graduated in 99. So it was like the dot-com boom.
We were opposite. I graduated law school in 93, which was the low recession.
Yeah.
Real quick point, because I have a lot of siblings. And one of the things I learned applying to colleges, and I tell kids all the time, is don't apply to business, right? It's the most competitive. Like, everybody wants to go to business major, Penn, Michigan, all these schools. Apply to like mythology, or because they're looking for students, because nobody cares once you're there what your major is.
You can bounce around once you're in. Once you get in, keys are open.
Right, and write your essay like, I always dreamed of being a nurse.
It's good advice.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's good advice. I didn't do that on purpose, but it is good advice.
But you're exactly, I just clicked to me. I'm like, gosh, this is living proof.
Yeah.
My brother got early accepted to Penn.
Yep.
And I always say, you owe me, because I think it was like mythology or something. And he wrote his whole personal statement of, you know, he has this passion, and the minute he got in, he switched to
snake
business, graduated Wharton, and, you know, he sold Smart Balance recently, and, you know, I get no credit, though. His older brother, you know, it's like, yeah, whatever, your advice is shit. Anyway.
Smart Balance.
Popcorn, butter.
Got it.
A bunch of gluten-free companies.
Got it.
Really great entrepreneur. All right, so now you don't know what you really want to do at Michigan. What kind of sales did you go into?
So it was research and consulting. So it was a company called Yankee Group, essentially.
Great company.
Yeah, so it was Yankee Group, Gartner Group, Forrester's. Basically, we had about 100 analysts or something like that. And we sold access to their brains, for lack of better words. So a lot of tech research, wireless companies. So that's what I did. And I was pretty good at it. I mean, I always knew I wanted to try my own thing. But I did that for about 5-6 years out of college. It was good. I did it right till the economy switched, basically.
Nice. And then when the economy switched, what was your perspective? Like, what were you thinking? Because obviously you made a conscious choice. Okay, economy's going down. This is a secular thing. What did you decide to do and why?
So I always kind of the urge to try to do my own business. And at Yankee Group, when I went into it, the economy was, like I said, great. Business was booming. Everyone was making money. And I saw a switch. And I was doing well, but I saw my boss at the time and other people I was friends with just walk in fired one day. And it almost in my brain, I never wanted to be in that position. I mean, these were guys I was out of college. I was young 20s. And these were, you know, 40, 50-year-old guys with families. And they just walk up and it's poof, it's gone. And I just never wanted to be in the position where I could walk in and somebody could tell me that one day. It's like, see you later. And not really to a fault of their own. The economy shifts. It was outside right. their control.
Although the irony is that most entrepreneurs or multimillionaires in America go bankrupt twice in their life.
I know. Right? I know. That's true.
There's that innocence of, oh, I could be fired, but wait, what if everybody fell on me? In fact, I tell people, if you
want to. But it's your own doing a lot of times than that. So, yeah. Like, you're controlling your own destiny.
That's a great
more so.
Distinction.
Whereas this, you're not. So, that's kind of what sparked it. And so I went from basically that job right into Barstool. I knew I basically collected unemployment while I started Barstool. I quit and was able to still get the unemployment and put the wheels in motion to
what
start the company.
What year was that?
This was about 2004.
2004, because your overnight success, as they say, in 14 years.
There was nothing overnight successful about Barstool Sports.
But people think that, right?
There was nothing overnight successful about Barstool.
And Barstool Sports, we take it, you didn't raise millions of dollars using the coverage from Yankee Group. It was a grassroots.
I lived at home. I had a million different titles for myself. It was a newspaper, and you know, I had fake aliases so people wouldn't know that I was doing the writing, the sales, the marketing, all of it. I delivered the newspaper myself. I wrote all the articles. I woke up at like 4 a.m. every day and handed the newspaper out at the subway station. I'd write during the day, drive back to the subway stations at night, hand them out again. I mean, a lot of people still in Boston recognize me. It's like, oh, you handed me the paper like a decade ago.
And homeless guys that you like hired to hand it out to,
I hired homeless people. That lasted one day. The homeless people surprisingly didn't have the best work ethic.
Surprise.
So we were paying them. We had like Barstool Sports shirts. It didn't work, and I ended up selling the shirts. And we're a big merch company. It's something we've done forever. We literally did it since the first week of the company. I had all these extra shirts. We just started selling them through the newspaper. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't an overnight success.
What do you think about the term "you're lucky"? Right, because people look, I'm sure, at you and they're like, God, you're so lucky. Or even, you know, I was with Mike Tannenbaum from the Dolphins, and he sees his career as lucky. And I said, well, hold on a second. You had $100,000 of loans. You worked for $600 a month.
Yeah.
You know, and here you are up at 4 a.m. walking the streets. You know.
I mean, it's a combo. Okay. Luck for sure plays a factor, but I mean, it's sort of cliche. You got to be ready to capitalize on the luck. I mean, we came around. It started as a newspaper, for example, and there's a lot of different things that happened, but a guy who loved reading it in New York, in Boston, moved to New York. He said, if I build you a website, because I just want to read the thing, would you use it? This gentleman ended up being the CTO for Business Insider. So he was no schlub. He was a very smart guy. He built us the early website. I didn't plan that, so it's not something that I was like, oh my God, we should be doing this. It was lucky that this guy reached out and did that.
Touch a favor, right?
Correct. And then there's been a lot of things along the way that if it broke this way or broke that way, maybe we're not here. So it's a combination of luck and hard work.
Yeah, it's interesting because I retired, lost all my money. Right? I was an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking, I was going to go back into the technology side of stuff where I made my money, going to be the president of TELUS, their data division.
Yeah.
And I was helping out a friend and I met Lee Steinberg. And it was one of those moments where, you know, my whole life added up to this guy liking me.
Right.
And the same way the Business Insider said, hey, Jeff Morad just went over to the Diamondbacks. I need a COO.
Yep.
Will you be COO of the most notable sports agency in the world? I'm a sports guy.
Right.
Right. And I'm thinking, how did this all happen? Well, there's all those years of, and the reason he hired me, because we became obviously very close, was because of my technology background. I went to law school, He didn't really give a shit. He gets thousands of resumes of lawyers wanting to be an agent for him.
Yeah, sure.
It was that Iran CEO's first, you know, phone division, this, you know, convergence device in the 90s, and that intrigued him. And we also could communicate effectively because my brother is an ultra genius and went to Harvard, and Lee is almost similar personality. He felt good with me.
Yep.
But I think that, and I want your opinion, that the harder we work, that there's these touches of favor and that people experience, but they're not in a position because they haven't given the value forward first.
Yeah, yeah, you make your own luck to a degree. But I mean, it's still, again, there's a lot of people I think who probably could have worked as hard as I did and just, you know, the things didn't break, right? It's been, yeah, like you said, most entrepreneurs go bankrupt twice, most businesses fail. This is the only thing I've ever done. Right. So, I mean, I started Barstool and it basically worked.
Better man than me.
Yeah, I haven't had anything else. So maybe I am crazy talented. I don't know. Maybe I would hit 100%. I don't think so. But
you're getting so big. I always tell people, if you don't like someone, wish upon them overhead and employees. And
now we got a lot of those now. Yeah. We had one for a long time. Then we had 15 or 10 to 15 for a long time. And we're up around 90 now. So it's growing pretty quick.
That's awesome. All right. So now Barstool starts taking off.
Yep.
Tell me about, you know, your playbook and challenges of scaling. Because it's one thing to be small and successful, but, you know, what was your strategy in scaling your business? And I know you had like a lot of offers coming in.
Yeah.
It's easy to say, oh, I should take the money.
So, I mean, I never anticipated. I mean, as always, I thought Barstool was at a great spot in the marketplace. I thought we had a voice that nobody else did. Generally, when we met somebody in our demo, whether you say 18 to 40 year old guys, if they hadn't heard of Barstool and then you showed it, be like, oh my God, where's this been? So I always believed in the brand, but I never thought we'd take investment. I mean, I was pretty happy for the most part with how I was doing. So it wasn't this huge scale. I mean, we ran a tight ship and we made a pretty big profit, probably more than people thought we were making for a long time. And I was doing better. Like, I would have been happy if I started Barstool making 60 grand a year and just doing something that I liked. I didn't never expect it to be like well into the seven figures just doing it myself, but we got there by ourselves. So I never thought we were going to scale or go from the 15 to 90. I thought I was actually going to, this would be what I was doing. And then the Churning Group came along and they basically were like, if we gave you money and support, what would you do with it? And they made it very clear they were behind the voice. They're like, we don't want to change a thing. Right. You're going to be in complete control of the content. We're not going to change it. It's going to be, that's why we're talking to you. And once I got confident on that, then the scale. So I don't think we could have gotten to this point without hiring the business side, Erica Nardini and, you know, Peter Chernin, who I didn't know at the time. I had no idea who he was. Added a level of credibility to us that let us kind of take the next step and continue to grow.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you have a woman CEO.
Yep.
And there's a lot of haters out there. Is my brand's growing, and I'm learning what you know, that this frequency side of, you know, there's 3.2 billion people on the internet, and you can attract your, as long as they're highly engaged, you can really be successful and monetize it.
Totally.
You know, one of the things that I find difficult with, and I had it when I represented Troy Aikman, Steve Young, is there's always people that they project what they see onto you.
Yeah.
And we deal with it. This atmosphere about women is difficult. Because everyone can pick and choose any words that we say. I have three daughters and a wife.
Yeah.
I give millions of dollars to empower women in Africa.
Yeah.
And
that's very noble.
I love it, but yet there's haters out there that would say, oh, you said this and you're a sexist or you're a racist, or, you know, my business partner's Warren Moon and I've been called a racist in the past from somebody. Like, wait a second, I give my life to Warren.
Right,
You know, I don't see color.
Right.
You know, if you're a jerk, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, like, I've seen stuff, like, haters out there say that things that you say, or you're, not even that you say, right?
It's your,
the guys on the radio, it's like, almost to the point, hey, look, where do we draw the line of telling a joke and, you know, portraying an image, but yet our actions speak louder than our words? You're a leader in this. There's not many women CEOs, and you're in this space, and I want to give you credit for that. And also, I want to hear your opinion. How do you deflect, because it's part of your frequency, these haters?
I mean, it, my nature. I have thick skin. Like, I honestly don't care. Like, I thrive in chaos. It's, I think, why some of our audience likes us. I don't back. It's probably why we end up in more trouble, if you want to call it
handcuffed
that.
Handcuffed, kicked out of places.
Like, we engage. Like, if you say something about me, I'm going to try to, like, bury you. That's just my personality. It's how I talk to my friends. That's how I talk to everybody. And some people clearly don't like it, and some people take things I'd say out of context. I do worry. The only concern I have is how it affects the business side. Like, are we going to lose advertisers? And I really treat it now the same way I treated it when I ran the business myself. Like, and the money was going directly into my pocket. You know, it's like, well, am I going to stifle my voice for this? Or is this going to basically sacrifice the brand and our voice, which is why we're here? But I don't, if you don't like me, I honestly don't care. I don't care what you say about me. It just doesn't bother me. It doesn't faze me at all. I like it. I mean, we have a phrase that, you know, I like being in the mud. That's where I feel natural, and that hasn't changed since we started. What's that?
Make that your next T-shirt.
The mud.
I like being in the mud.
We have mud gills. Like, and when someone engages us, we just drag them down and welcome to the mud. I mean, like the Bleacher Report CEO the other day trashed us for no reason. He was doing like a podcast.
Yeah.
He said we're not inclusive and that we purposely offend people. And it's like, all right, well, welcome to the mud, buddy. And the thing that works is, I think we had on iTunes, like our app was number 26, like Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
20 hours later, it's number one. Because people are like, we can swear on this thing, right?
Yeah.
Can we swear on this podcast?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like,
absolutely.
Fuck you. To like, you know, it's like you want to come at our crowd and
he can swear.
This is the result. It galvanizes us. So we're strange. The more you hate us, it's like fuel to kind of build us.
I consider you guys the Howard Stern of sports. Right, because Howard for years figured this out, and he's from Massachusetts. He's hyper intelligent like you, well educated, but he figured out, and it's that saying that I loved about Howard Stern, that people tuned in to listen to what he was going to say next, that loved him, and twice as many people who hated him tuned in to see what he's going to. It's almost like our president, right? Twice as many people tune in because they don't like him, and it's a really interesting thing. But you have to keep your frequency, and the one thing I respected about Howard Stern is that he kept his frequency as he scaled and got bigger, right? He became this voice of Sirius at XM and a huge stockholder, but he never backed down to the SEC, the FCC, he never backed down to anyone. He was the first guy that drew everyone in the mud, and he just has his frequency. How do you not only carry your frequency, but you have to really empower, you know, because not just you have to have a thick skin, but Erica, your talent, your helpers, you know, there's a value-based system here of, look, man, you got to be a part of this and part of the cause. How do you instill that?
That's in the hiring. You got to hire the right people. You know, I'm a firm believer that Barstool sort of represents like the silent majority. Like, most people feel how we feel.
Right.
It's finding the people that are similar to us, have similar beliefs. Everybody's different at Barstool. Not everyone's like me. So I actually don't care if our employees trash me or say, I mean, I don't care. Like,
everyone's I bring allowed, more power to you.
Everyone's allowed to say what they feel and disagree, agree, whatever. But it's we're pretty good. Once it's changing a little bit, but once we hire somebody, we believe we've hired the right person. We just let them be themselves. That's really what we do.
That frequency. And have you ever studied Buddhism?
No.
So in Buddhism,
do a lot of people say yes to that one on this?
I don't know. I've never asked the question before.
I just, no, I haven't.
It came to me that a lot of people talk about giving energy to something.
Yeah.
And you know where I see the catalyst of your true hockey stick exploitation is that you allow one of the biggest, most powerful entities in sports to give you power. How? Because you took them into the mud, right? Roger Goodell in the NFL. And you were a genius about it. And most people don't understand this Buddhist philosophy of, don't you understand, you know, it's that idea of, I won't march against the war, but I'll march for peace. Because the minute you start hating on someone, you're actually giving them power.
Totally.
You're giving them control.
Totally.
And this is the basis of your playbook, which is, I have a frequency, and I mean, from all the guys that I've interviewed, there's a consistent, persistent belief that I'm me. And it's either my grandma told me when I was little, or this happened, or I was just born with this attitude that I'm gonna do it, and as long as I made 60 grand and got to do what I loved and told people what I thought or shared my ideas, that was good enough. You know, where do you see this NFL thing going from here? Because can you continue to capitalize? Are they still suckers in the fact that they jump at the stuff that you do?
Yeah, they're idiots.
Haven't they banned you from all
I know,
of the mall?
We've talked about it a lot, that if they were smart, they would just give us the credit. Like, I went to media day this year. I was like Mitchell Schwartz, I think. I had some pass. It wasn't even the right color.
Right, no one can recognize. Yeah, you're like me, right?
I thought you weren't allowed in here.
Even the NFL, they know your name. But, like, most of the guys in the NFL wouldn't recognize you.
I don't know about that one. I think they actually may at this point. But it's
more power to you.
Yeah, they're helping in the sense that we're growing bigger, and we call ourselves sort of a pirate ship. It's like we're just going around shooting our cannons at everybody. It's hard to maintain that.
Shoot your cannon at me, man. I want to get in the mud. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Get me in the mud.
And as you grow, it's obviously harder to keep that image and not become like corporate.
ESPN.
So the NFL is doing us a favor in the sense they keep banning us and they keep saying they don't know who they are. They stole our trademark the other day, the Saturday for the Boys, and then we like sent them a cease and desist and they took the shirts down. So they've done a good job of letting us grow while keeping this renegade vibe. Now, if Roger Goodell was watching this, he'd probably be like, he's right, why don't we just credential them and then they can just be part of the corporate. It won't be a story anymore, but knock on wood, they keep doing it.
Here's what's interesting. So, you know, obviously we're kind of aligned with the NFL in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Right? I market with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Warren sits on the board. We do so much with the NFL, the NFLPA. And the interesting
NFLPA
thing
likes us.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, I had a conversation with Roger about this Buddhist philosophy that I had.
What do you think of that? He'd probably look at you like you have 30 heads.
Hopefully he's dragging me in the mud and is like, oh, that Dave Belcher, I'm never going to listen to him. Yeah. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's not a big Buddha guy from what I understand based on what you just told me.
He's just a bigger guy.
Yeah.
Now, you also are very creative. And, you know, some of the stuff that I love about, you know, your work is stuff like the bite of pizza.
Yeah.
Right? Because it has nothing to do with sports, but you know your demographic. And you figure out these really cool, fun things that millions of people, you know, I don't know how many bites you've had already here. You've been in Minnesota a few days.
You've had a decent amount.
A decent amount, right? Yeah. And you stay so thin, which is why you only take one bite, which is smart. I'm doing 50, I turned 50 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I'm doing 50 birthday parties for charity. I'm building this Empowerment and Leadership Center for Women.
Okay.
And 50 different parties. And I'm thinking, I can't even eat 50 pieces of cake, let alone the amount I drink.
Right.
Like, I'm going to end up being 300 pounds by the end of the year. So I got to
kind of learn
your one bite rule. Anyway, you know, how do you, and where does it come from? Is it your ideas, these kind of things, or do these come organically?
Yeah, they come organically. They're my ideas, and all of the stuff we do are people's ideas. And I think one of the things we've been good is we're just nimble. And again, it's when you say luck, like I wasn't like, oh my God, this pizza thing's a brilliant idea. It actually started with Dan Big Cat, who's grown into a huge star himself, where we had a debate on what you could eat like every day. If you could eat one food, he said burritos, I said pizza. And we just started doing it. And people liked the pizza, so I was like, all right, I reacted to it. And we're always doing that. There's a million ideas we've done over the course of 15 years that haven't worked.
Right.
And, you know, we've aired once and never done it. But if something works, we'll beat it to death until people are like, we don't want it anymore. Right now, people still want me eating pizza, so I'll keep eating pizza.
And you tie merch into that as well?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've had way more failed shirt ideas than we have successful ones, but the successful ones are big.
Right. And now that the more that you have an engaged audience, so, you know, that engaged audience, I love, you know, I work with Gary Vee because I love the fact as a sports agent, I learned that whole, you know, why am I representing all these guys? Like, I was going to buy an entity, a big brand, and it was $12 million. And I thought to myself, why would I do that when I could put $12 million into building my own brand?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And who the hell is Dave Meltzer? Well, who the hell is Dave Portnoy? Right. Mm-hmm. So I thought, gosh, if I get an engaged crowd that knows my frequency, and, you know, Gary with K-Swiss can sell his book's number, you know, right behind, you know, the Fury book for the president,
mm-hmm.
because he has those millions of followers, but all of them are on that frequency.
Right.
You know, and it just keeps growing.
It's like a Warren Buffett quote, most powerful, I think, commodity is eyeballs.
Yeah, and you guys have those.
Yeah.
Where do you think this is going on as far as the social media? And do you still think, you know, brands like I had my podcast launched at number 4 and I almost fell over with a heart attack. I go, how did I beat out all these people because I found this frequency.
Yeah.
Where do you see there's a drop off between some of these kid influencers and 40-year-olds or even 50 like me now? Do you see there's going to be a saturation, just too much noise? And it's only the guys with the money that are going to be able to capitalize because they change the analytics, they change everything.
Yeah, I mean, the smoke and mirrors is the analytics to a degree. I mean, as long as you have your engaged audience, kind of like what you're saying, obviously, I think the younger crowd, the Jake Pauls of the world have an advantage because technology is geared towards the younger people and they're doing things that probably me and you don't even know basically exist with
I hired a 17-year-old to help me with my Instagram.
Right, so
that's the only way I could do it.
And Instagram probably for us is old.
You know, hire a 17-year-old.
Yeah, you're gonna get Jake Paul in the mix. Yeah. Right. So I think as long as you have your crowd and speak, there's a market for it, then people will be able to succeed.
Awesome. Now, personally, you have your philosophies in business. What about your legacy? Right. I mean, I'm always curious with guys that don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Which are my favorite kind of guys. Right. Yeah. I mean, I just have to admit part of the reason I wanted you on this is I want to do more with Barstool.
Yeah.
Because this is the frequency that I love Gary. I love you guys.
Yeah.
And I've been in the NFL world for so long, in the hypocritical world of sports agents. And I mean, you know the bullshit, right?
Yeah, right.
And it's such bullshit. What legacy do you want to leave?
This is going to sound like a bad answer, but I don't care about my legacy. Like I've said it a million times. It's like give me a check for like $20 million, I'll disappear and like hang out in Nantucket and golf. Like I'm not doing this on some like basic primal need to have Barstool be a legacy. If someone wants to buy it and give me enough money and run this thing into the ground,
knock yourself out. Is that an offer? Is that an offer?
Because
I'm good at that, man.
Yeah,
I'm good at that.
Do it.
You say it's $20 million the price?
Well, no, $20 million to me.
To you,
okay.
All right,
okay.
That's right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to keep that in mind.
If
I have it, I got to wait. Would I put that money in my brand or yours?
Peter's phone number. Make that deal happen.
Okay. Well, it's good to know because even if I don't have it, I'm a good agent.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
Take your cut.
It easy, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Listen, that's my number. You give me that, I'm like, see you later, buddy.
Now, through what appears to be, you know, very clear distinction of what you like to do, is there any charitable aspect of what you want to do? And I don't care if it's a bad answer, right? I mean,
we always do charity.
I'm sorry to make you look like a good guy.
Yeah, no, we've probably done a couple $1 million worth of charity, and this is even before, like, the churn-in. But they're generally case by case. So, you know, the Boston Marathon, and this is way back, we raised $250,000 for a guy who was a victim in that. We've done a ton with the military, whether it be getting people like the high-tech wheelchairs. We've done a lot with pets, like different types of dogs. Yeah. I'm a huge dog guy, so anytime something happens to that. You know, there's countless. There was a hockey player from Boston, a female, who actually got paralyzed in a Winter Classic game. We raised about $100,000 from her. Police, anytime there's some sort of accident in our cities, we generally raise about $100,000. Same method every time. We put T-shirt on sale, donate 100% of the profits to whatever the cause is. But we probably raised close to $2 million, and that is something we want to do more with.
That's awesome. Now, last question. I know we have the New England Invitational here in Minnesota.
Correct.
The Super Bowl.
Good way to put it.
All right, one simple question. How many points are the Patriots going to win by?
I actually think it's going to be close, if I'm going to be totally honest. The Patriots always seem to play close Super Bowls. A couple plays decide it.
Which makes it great.
What's that?
Which makes the Super Bowl great.
It makes the Super Bowl great. The last two have been like the best two, probably, Super Bowls that they've won of all time. I think it's going to be close. I think they win by like a field goal, something like that. But they'll definitely win. That's the thing.
In the last minutes, or will it?
I think it's going to be very close. I think the Eagles are really good.
Oh, yeah.
But Brady, Belichick, I mean, yeah.
I lied because I have one more question to ask because you've been to Super Bowls like me and you're a sports guy.
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference between the two teams that I have found, and, you know, we work with Cam Newton, and when he went to the Super Bowl, it was bigger than him.
Yeah.
He played a perfect season,
like,
right? And he acted like it from start to finish.
Yeah.
And this team is so young that my only fear, where I think it could be more, and I love to have a close Super Bowl, I'm really concerned about so many young guys. And you believe in situational knowledge, meaning the more you do something, the easier it gets. There's no team like this team this year, as far as experience goes, for the Patriots.
Yeah.
There's also, this is a really green team like Carolina. Yeah, and I'm worried that these two weeks.
I mean, there's nothing I love more than this to be a bloodbath and shut up all these trash.
I want a three-point game. I'm sorry. But I, and I'm a Tom Brady fan. you know, if I could have represented any quarterback beyond the legacy guys at Moon, Aikman, and Young,
yeah,
I mean, to represent Tom Brady,
I would think that would be a good choice. Greatest quarterback of all time.
And a Michigan guy.
Same
year. You got it all going for you.
My year.
Your karma, I know you're not Buddhist, but I believe in past lives. Whatever you did in your past lives, you are blessed, my brother. Yeah. Your future lives, you're fucked.
Yeah.
But
I'll take it.
Exactly, man. You are just blessed. And it's just been a blessing to have you on the playbook.
Thanks
and I keep up what you do. If you ever need anything, anything at all, Sports One Marketing, Dave Meltzer, we are huge fans. And we're willing to help you guys however you can. And this is Dave Meltzer with Dave Portnoy on the playbook.
Be sure to tune in next Tuesday when we feature another story on how a sports icon went from the playing field to the boardroom.